there's quite a disparity between all the systems. Of course, as you know very well, these tracks are all shared by various railroads. Now, my concern daily taking trains is to have the exact disparity and the perhaps dysfunction and miscommunication over.
Yeah, like you see, like out here, they have these guys that come out and they have the high rail vehicles. That's a street legal vehicle that has a set of wheels on this chassis that comes up hydraulically. And what it does, it lifts the actual vehicle up. Let's say it's a Ford Explorer, Ford Excursion. But it actually drives along the tracks because it has steel wheels underneath. The tracks are 5 feet wide. So this thing comes out, you know, under the chassis of the actual wheels come little railroad wheels, little steel wheels. And the rubber wheels propel this vehicle down the tracks. Now, this guy is called a track inspector. They have track inspectors like New York City has cockroaches. They're everywhere checking this thing out. And once they get on the rail, they communicate with a radio back to, or a cell phone, with a laptop back to tower, which clears his way along, and he has a radio inside this vehicle that communicates to any other railroad vehicle, be it a high rail vehicle, a locomotive, a construction vehicle, or any of the wayside stations for telemetry. His vehicle communicates automatically with them and will warn him if another vehicle is within miles of him. So that way it takes miles to stop a freight train, so it takes 1 mile at least to stop a freight train effectively. So what they do is they communicate electronically over radio signals without him having to do anything. They take the stupidity factor out of it and let the computers talk, and it works wonderfully, you know? The only time these guys ever get hit is when they don't pay attention to the big yellow blinking light and the buzzer that says, get off the tracks. They just ignore it, and they get killed, and it happens every once in a while. But our track inspectors out here are like cockroaches in New York, you know what I'm saying? Back to you.
W2PDQ.
Hey, PDQ, stand by for a second. You know, they definitely monitor the tracks quite a bit, and I'm being very irrational in my statement. You know, statistically, you know, I could drive a car to work daily and have probably 500,000 more chance of getting killed. But back to you, PDQ, break in. Go ahead. Have fun.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but, you know, I was involved with the Northeast upgrade in Amtrak on the North Coast here, Northeast Coast, and I don't think anything has been upgraded since 1976.
Cam4GHN. Well, Ken, I'll throw that to you. You may be up to date on that or not. I am not.
No, I know nothing about that. But I was shocked at one time when I came home from Europe and I ran onto a train down in, I can't remember where it was. Let's say Philly. And I took the train up to New York, you know? I landed in Philadelphia and I took the train up to New York to visit my mother. And I'm used to riding on the trains in Europe, and no joke, you sit down, you can fill up a glass of beer to the top, and it will not spill, you know? Even when it starts and stops, you don't have to worry about anything. You can walk around, you have no feeling that you're even moving, you know? And you look at the speedometer on the train, and it shows you that it's going 250 miles an hour, you know? No big deal. You know, listen, no, it's 180, so it's like 300 k's per hour. I come here and get on an Amtrak train, and if you get up out of your seat, you're taking your life in your hands. It's like you're being thrown from the right to the left. It looks like you're on a ship during a hurricane, you know? This is ridiculous for a railroad. This is how you run a railroad? I mean, I can't believe the cars stay on the track running this fast, and they're going 60 miles an hour. Look at the difference, you know? So I agree with what Richard says, but I have no actual professional knowledge of what's going on with that railroad over there. Over to you, Mitch.
I was just there in the late 70s helping upgrade the signal cables on the Northeast Corridor, and I don't think anything has ever been done since that time. It's a state of disrepair at this point.
Thank you.
the ride, the quality of the ride that you take on your train when you traverse the highways and byways of upstate New York coming down into the belly of the beast of Manhattan. How do you feel the train travels? Do you feel it smooth, or is it unnerving, back to you, Mitch?
From GA to Dobbs Ferry, 32-minute to 48-minute ride. When you hit Spite and Dival, where it derailed last year, they slow down to 30-35 mph, and it rocks like a ship in a storm.
Okay, I hear you, man. See, so it hasn't gotten any better, like Richard's saying. You know, like Richard's saying, he's speaking the truth, man. But it's funny, because we don't have passenger service out here. And the thing is, you know, they're constantly rebuilding the tracks. They're doing it. It's all for freight. It's all for monetary purposes. They're making, and speed limits, 80 miles an hour, you know. And you can just look out, you see the track is what they call this continuous track. There's no well to the track. It just comes in this long piece that gets deployed, looks like licorice, off the back of heavy equipment, and then it gets thermite bonded together, and that way you don't have that clack. And this track is so smooth, they should have passenger service on it, and they could travel at 150 miles an hour, but there's no financial gain out of that, because nobody lives out here to get on the train, believe it or not, so they find no reason to put it out here. Can you believe that? But, Denver, Colorado, just built a beautiful light rail system connecting all their points, to include their beautiful airport, which is five times the size of the island of Manhattan. Can you believe that? Over to you, Mitch.
Yeah, Ken, not being in the railroad biz, I'm amazed. In the last 3 years I've been commuting here at Dobbs Ferry, at least on 5-7 occasions, I've had incidents where they've had a flat spot on the wheel, which I assume you know that, where they had to stop, inspect, determine if it's safe to proceed. I don't know the relevancy of that, but do you shine some light perhaps? That shouldn't happen that frequently, should it?
No. No, we have a shop here called the Wheel Truing Shop, where everything gets taken in after every trip and gets laser inspected. But the funniest thing is, along the tracks, we have what they call hot bearing detectors. It's an actual device that's set up along the tracks with an infrared scope on it. And as a train passes, it has to travel, for example, at restricted speed, as they call it, in the slowdown, you know? And it checks, not very slow, let's say 40 miles an hour. This thing checks the bearings to see if they're heating up. It checks the rotation of the wheels to see if they're heating up. All of these different things. And then it goes along the track. This is every couple of miles they have these bearing detectors. On the tracks they have dragging equipment detectors, which is in between the two tracks. Something's being dragged. Like, let's say the air hose got unhooked from the other one, from the one car from the other. It'll be dragging, and then it'll hit the detector, and that'll warn the tower. And they'll send a first respond crew out immediately to repair the problem or pull the train out of service immediately, you know. But that doesn't happen to the point where they allow it to become a problem. I don't understand. This is what I don't understand, and I think you summed it up because it's all about money. Passenger service seems to run much more shabbily than these two-mile-long trains that are hauling coal are treated like as if they're filled with gold. You know, and then the passenger service is treating it like they just got excess body parts shoveled into a car and they're just moving it from one place to another. Like they're moving garbage. They're treating people like garbage, and they're treating coal like black diamonds. Back to you, Mitch.
KM4DHN Friday. As well as that, the divots in the nickel plate road I see loading station at GCT and along the rail. It served me as well, but again, I don't know if that's relevant or dangerous or whatever. But, you know, I guess you're saying coal is, you know, 50 times more valuable than human beings. Of course, I jest.
Well, one train has $1 million product on it, they say. You know, and we get 100 of them a day through here. It's funny because they use all the senses. They use sight by using, you know, a heat detector, infrared detectors for the bearings. They use sound. They have every car marked with a counting device, some kind of a passive, I don't know how to describe it. It's like a patch that's applied to the side of it, and it has a special serial number encrypted on it. And what happens is when it passes an RF detector, it's an RFID tag. When it passes a certain point, they're red. They could drive by the detector at 70, 80 miles an hour. They're red. All that data is instantly compiled. The cars are weighed over a certain part of the track. This all happens along the journey of the train, you know? And they use sight, they use hearing, they're listening for certain squealing. Things go by actual microphones, and they pick up if they're hearing a squealing, like a bearing is starting to squeal. If a wheel is being dragged or anything weird, or intermittently being dragged, and it's not heating up enough, you know? And then they have greasers that grease the curves. They actually have machines that will grease the curve of a track automatically with machinery after the train passes and before the next train comes. They actually automated a greasing machine. They have an automated greasing machine to grease the curve of the track so you don't get that squeal when it goes around. You know what I'm saying? See, they treat coal like as if it's, you know, like we should be treated as humans. So look at the disparity between how it is. And who knows this? Who really knows this? It's like I'm spilling the beans, you know? Back to you, Mitch.
And the screeching of the tracks as they, you know, put their pressure on left or right is... they're not greasing them here. That's more disparaging, of course, than you speak. Coal is worth far more than my life. But not surprising, just the way life is. You know, again, the odds are in your favor. I chose to drive into work, or ride a bike, or walk, or whatever. I'm sure the odds are over.
I hear you, man. I hear you. Hey, buddy, I'm going to have to jump out of here because I got to take care of some business, but it's been nice chatting with you once again, and I'm going to have to go inside the building here and tighten up some stuff. We had some big storms blow through here, so I was trying to hang loose, you know, and be ready to move in case the phone rang, but it never rang, so I'm going to go back in and continue what I was doing now that the storms have passed, but it's been nice touching base with you, Mitch. Back to you.
Yeah, I've been hoping to chew with you for a bit, but I've been very distracted and busy and out of town and old parent issues, all that adds up. Anyway, yeah, wow, it's late, 8:30 Eastern, 8 past my normal in bedtime, which is 10 in the hay. Great chatting with you. I'll catch up with you again soon. AM4GHN, Ken, back to your final.
Okay, man, and good luck with the house. Hope everything turns out. You're a very wise man when you come to those decisions, very rational. People are overpaying. It goes in waves, doesn't it? They scramble, everybody starts throwing money out. It becomes almost a competition, and then at the end, they have to pay the mortgage, you know, or you have to pay the taxes, because if you pay a lot more than what you should have paid, the assessor's going to get wind of that, and they're going to jack the taxes up. So there we go. All right, man, good luck with that. I'll see you later. 73 is from Alliance, Nebraska. This is N2VHC. Bye.
N2VHZ. Repeater disconnected. ALU mobile phone.
Hey, good morning, Charlie. KD2 BOR. You're early.
Well, I opened my eyes at 11:30. So I said, let me get out of bed now, because if I go back to sleep, I'll end up being rushing to get there. So I got to take the long way today anyway. The bridge doesn't sound like it's, this George doesn't sound too good, so I'm going to go over the tap.
Okay. Pain in the neck lately getting to work, huh?
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's not knowing. I'm only going by the traffic. For all I know, I can get there and it would be fine. They've had the lower level outbound two lanes closed all week and it's been fine. But today they said there's a backup on the westbound cross Bronx. So I don't want to take a chance, so I'll go the long way.
Yeah, when are you supposed to be getting that antenna? I read that message yesterday, but I don't remember what it said.
I don't know. It's the Father's Day gift. If she's going to hold out till Father's Day, that's the 21st or something of June. So that's the earliest. I mean, that's the latest I'd get it. I'm hoping she orders it earlier. She knows me. I hate waiting, but I know her. She hates giving gifts early.
Yeah, since it's got to do with the radio, I think you're going to be getting that present on Father's Day, even if she does order it. Well, you're always home. You'll see it coming.
Yeah, I know. Well, unless she has a chip to her mother's, but since I know what it is, I don't think she will. We'll see. I'm not going to bug her about it. But I was up on the roof taking a look at where I'm going to put it, and I really got to get that whole system up a little higher. And I'm trying to think of how the hell I'm going to do that.
Well, pal, I got to say, you're on your own with this one. I don't climb.
If you saw my roof, it wouldn't bother you. If I can do it, you can do it. But no, this is a one-man job. I just have to think of the logistics for doing this. So I'll have to take a picture, send it to you. Maybe you can give me some ideas. I'd like to get it up another foot. Because I'm going to have to lower the 2-meter horizontal beam when I put it up. And, you know, it has to make room on top of the, top above the beam. And I don't want to compromise the beam for the 220 antenna. So if I could get another foot up there, that would kind of put the horizontal beam in the same spot that the other beam is in right now. So it's just a matter of logistics. I got to come up with a way of raising it a foot. And I used unconventional masting. I used these horizontal brackets that the truck drivers use to keep their loads secured. It's two pipes that telescope into each other, and then they have a crank on them and a ratcheting system, and you can ratchet them against the sides of the wall, and they hold the load that's in the tractor trailer in position. You know, they'd leave them, some guys would leave them around. I took them apart and stole two masts, and I have them, one is the support mast, and one is the mast coming out of the rotator. So I don't want to have to take all of that apart and start over again. So I gotta try to come up with a way of adding more footage to the bottom of the bottom mass.
And 1LU, KD2BOR. You gotta take a picture of it and send it to me. I gotta see what you're talking about and where it's mounted.
Yeah, it's hard to describe. Plus, it's mounted on my chimney, which is on the slant of a roof. You know, I could always try to put something under the bottom of the mast to hold it up a little bit, you know, to give it support. I mean, the mast has probably about a foot. I could raise it in the bracket itself, but that would give it, you know, it wouldn't be supported on anything on the bottom. That takes a little bit of the stress away from the chimney, having it rest on the roof. So if I lift it up off the roof now, the whole setup is, you know, putting a lot of stress on the chimney. I certainly don't want the chimney to come down. Yeah, this weekend I'll take a picture of it. I gotta get up there and blow off the roof anyway. All those seed pods are all over the freaking place. I gotta get my gutters clean, too.
Debbie looked for a guy because our maintenance guy's not well. He's not going to do any climbing, and she's not going to allow him to climb on her roof. I don't climb. Looks like she found a pretty good company in New Jersey. I don't know if they're just in New Jersey, but she was going to call them up to get an estimate on getting the gutters clean. Because the other night when it rained, the water was pouring over from those whirly birds.
How you all doing?
Do we have another station in there?
I'm not a station, Rocky. I'm a human being. N2DXD.
Oh, okay, Sean. I couldn't tell. I unkeyed, and you were there. And I didn't recognize the voice right away with my hearing. Good morning. We got Charlie out there, as you know.
Yeah, good morning, all fellas. Sorry to break in like that. Want to slip in between the key-ups. Thinking either, like, telekinesis to rise the antenna up for the masting, or perhaps a military drone for drawing.
Yeah, I was thinking of something maybe as simple as a milk crate. Just something to rest the bomb with a mast on, so that it takes a little bit of the pressure off the brackets. I've got threaded rod and a combination of threaded rod and 2x4s squeezing my chimney. Well, I'll have to send you a picture. It's hard to describe. It's not your conventional setup that you usually see, but it, so far it's working. So I just have to come up with a way of getting it up a little bit higher. Either that or I'll have to go out and buy new masting, and I really don't want to. I don't want to redo the rotor and the thrust bearing and everything that I have up there. I'd rather just raise the whole set up a little bit higher. So I'll come up with something one way or another. But good to hear you. A little noisy. Are you on an HD?
I am. Is it that bad?
Oh, no, we're hearing everything you said. It's just, that's why it was hard to understand who you are, because you had some white noise on you. You sounded better on that last transmission.
Pretty cool, I'm trying to hang in there. I've only been there for a little bit, but Charlie, you're rolling in overnight, and watching your room in the garage. Whatever it is, we're here after midnight. This is exciting.
I spoke too soon. You got a little noisier. I'm guessing you're home. Maybe you don't have a high-powered radio for this repeater. But anyway, good to hear you. It was a surprise. I wasn't sure who it was either. Couldn't recognize the voice with the white noise. But good to hear you in there. I know you're going to the Ham Fest tomorrow. I'm sorry I'm going to miss it, but got a million things to do. Million and one now. But anyway, hope you have a good time. Rocky, over to you. KD2BOR. N1LU, mobile 287, westbound.
82BR, yeah, Chris. Sean, you got real noisy on that last one. I don't know if you said, am I going to the Ham Fest? Sure, I'm going to be there. I'll be there bright and early, pal.
We'll see you there. Let me back it down. I'm going to be a little noisy here, in the house right now. I'm bouncing around doing things. You guys pick it up. I just want to jump in and say hello. We'll be listening from a distance here.
Hey, it's 73. We'll see you tomorrow.
Take care, Sean. Have a good time at the fest tomorrow. N1LU Mobile. Let me see if I have it. My other dilemma with the setup is, you know, I have to keep them spaced, you know, a decent amount of space apart. Luckily, one's horizontal. The other one's vertical, but they do have to be a little ways away from each other. So that's also why I want to grab the extra foot. So that with the spacing, I'm not compromising the beam, you know, the horizontal beam.
That was my next question, because I've never had a beam. I know people have had horizontal beams, even in my old hobby, and they've had a big stick or something above them. Well, how far apart do these antennas got to be so you don't get a compromise?
Tell you the truth, I'm not sure. I haven't stacked anything in a while. I'm guessing a minimum of a quarter of a wave away from each other. So because that's 2 meters, probably 19 inches would be the closest you'd want to get them.
Yeah, like I said, I never did that. I had my, I had a 4-element beam horizontal on the chimney, and then I had my my vertical up on top of the house, and they were a good distance apart.
I think I'll be fine with 19 inches, mostly because they're out of phase of each other. One's horizontal, one's vertical. So I think 19 inches will be fine. But that's 19 inches from the tip of the bottom element on the vertical 220 beam that I'm going to have up. So wherever, you know, however far down that goes down the mast, then I have to measure 19 inches from that and mount my horizontal antenna. So, you know, you're talking about like close to 2 feet by the time all is said and done. So I want to grab a little bit of extra height if I can anyway.
Yeah, height is might, as they say. Oh, well. I don't know. I better try and read up on that today and see how far antennas should be apart just for the heck of it.
KB2 NLA.
N1LU Mobile. Good morning, Chris. The other option is I have another mounting location. I'm sure this arrow antenna isn't very heavy, but the other mounting location has my two-element 6-meter beam. Right now, I'm not doing anything with 6. I would like to in the future, but that might be the other spot. Take that down and put this 220 up, but I don't know how high it'll get me. So, 6 of one, half a dozen of the other. It's going to be a compromise one way or another to get, you know, everything up. But hopefully I'll make the right choice and the 220 beam will work. That's the one I'm really concerned with. 6, I'm, you know, I haven't been on 6 in months, almost probably a year. So 220 I get on a lot. Good morning, Chris. And KB2NLA, N1LU.
Good morning. Just wanted to jump in here quickly and say hello.
Good morning, Chris.
Morning, Chris. Sorry about that. I was sipping my coffee.
No problem.
Hey, Chris, you expect your wife to be in soon and drag you to bed?
Yes, I do. I was getting out of bed. Where you going? I said, bathroom. She's like, good. She's like, turn the radios, that'll break your knuckles.
Wow. You got a heavy pair of gloves on. How are you doing with your testing, Chris? You bring the average up a little more?
No, I gave up on it.
Ah, Jesus. All right. There's always another time you can take it. Over to you, Joey.
All right, just trying to finish my snack here. What are you going for, your extra? I didn't hear that last transmission.
Yeah. Studying for the extra.
It is a bitch, but can be done. I did it, so I'm sure you can. Now's the time to do it with all this free time on your hands.
Hear 'em.
Perfect double. Good, Rocky.
He said I think Chris is trying not to transmit too much so his wife don't hear him.
Chris, what'd you say?
Connected N2VHZ repeater.
N2VHZ mobile, listen.
Bad, I doubled with the mobile station. Go ahead, try it again.
N2VHZ mobile.
N2DXT.
Mobile. Name is Ken Kilo Echo November. Back to you.
See if I have it. Good morning, Kenny. Out there in Nebraska. 82BOR.
Hey, it's 10:30 at night. What's happening, man? You wouldn't believe it, Rocky. I get it. You're going to love this, because I know it's your forte. I get into Tahoe because I only drive a mile to work and back. I've had this happen many times. I only drive a mile back and forth to work, if that. Right? So I get into Tahoe today, nothing. Not even a dim light. 5 volts across the battery. What's up with that? You know, that's what happens when you don't charge them, you know? What do you think about that, Rocky?
Well, not to tie a repeater up with this at this time of night. I would probably buy a new battery and try to charge the vehicle a little bit more. You're never putting the charge back in it. All right, I don't want to tie it up with car stuff. I think Chris jumped in there on, not Chris, Sean jumped in there on Echo Link. Over to you, Sean.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks, so it'd be a little easier to jump in here. M2DXB via the link. I'm just bouncing around the house, so I'm not at the station portion of the house where I can go full power. So, for convenience, I thought I'd sneak in on it. I'll say hi to Ken out there, active on the scene there. You can see all those things. And I'll just be sticking around listening in. You guys don't have to throw me into any kind of official rotation. If I got something good to say, I'll jump back in. Ken, good evening to you. And I'll kick it back to you, and then you can pass it around to DC Fit, and we'll be listening here as we come around the house at 12:30 a.m. after midnight. Back to you.
Hey, nice to hear you, man. It is biting 12:30, that's right. Yeah, 2 hours time difference. Hey, it's funny because when that first happened to me, when my battery wouldn't charge many, many years ago, I didn't know what was wrong. Somebody says, well, you don't drive that much to work. Only drive a mile. I says, yeah. It's, you're never charging the battery. Just ride a bike to work. That'll solve your problem. Or get a little moped and ride that. That's so much better, you know? Well, anyway, Rocky, here's what I did. I'm pretty shrewd. I bought it from Walmart. Yeah, I understand it's, you know, what am I going to do, right? It's either you get gouged out here, or you go to Walmart and buy an inferior product, but at least you pay less money. Well, they have 3-year warranties on all the batteries, and this battery has 3 years and 10 months on it. Two years and 10 months. So I have 2 months to get it to Walmart to get exchange it. Last time I had this happen to my car, they wanted to charge it. And I says, no, the warranty is exchange for a new one. They says, okay, and I got a new one. So tomorrow I'll be heading to Walmart with the battery, with the receipt. I keep it in my glove box and envelope, and I'm going to hand them the battery and leave with a new one, which will probably last me another 2.5 years, and then I'll have to go buy another one, you know? But that's the way it is with these things, man. You don't drive anywhere. That's the bad thing about not having a commute is that you never charge your battery. And it just constantly wears down every time you start the car. Back to you, Rocky.
All right, very good, Kenny. Do what you got to do with that battery, and I'm going to start passing it around. If you're going to be in there, we'll pick you back up. Over to you, Charlie, KD2BOR.
Okay, very good. KD2BOR, MLU in the group. Good morning, Ken. Sorry I didn't recognize your name. I knew it was you. I just couldn't remember your name. What is this moron in front of me doing? Jesus Christ, this time of the morning? You asshole. But good to hear you in there. You sound good. Yeah, that's pretty funny. A 1 mile commute, you've got battery trouble. Maybe you should go the long way. Make it 2 miles. My wife's got a commute like that, but she runs a lot of errands before she goes to school, which is right around the corner. It's probably even less than a mile. But she runs to the bank, and she runs to the donut shop to get coffee and a muffin. So she's, got the car moving. But plus, chores during the day, errands during the day. She tutors. I guess you've got a very quiet lifestyle out there in Nebraska. You must have a hell of a winter trying to keep that battery going with the cold weather. I guess I'm going to have a hell of a winter. Both the boys' cars are going to probably be home, so I'll have to keep them. them started up every so often, keep the batteries charging. I'm on 9W? Yeah, I'm on 9W, looking to get on the Palisades, Rocky. So doing pretty good so far. Let's see, Sean said he'll jump in when he wants. Let me pass it back to Ken in Alliance. This is N1LU. I'm sure his commute's going to be over pretty quick. N1LU, over to you, Ken.
Yeah, very good. I'm over here in the parking lot of my job, waiting to shut the radio shop down. And it's funny, I was on an Army base. I worked on the base. I lived on the base, and I only drove less than a mile a day. That's when it first happened to me. I couldn't understand what was going on. I said, my alternator, and they all laughed. They said, it happens to all of us, man. It happens to all of us. It's like the bad thing about not having to, you know, your battery will never charge. Every week, you got to go somewhere. If you don't go somewhere once a week, you're not charging that battery, trust me. You know, you got to drive about an hour or two, you know, so. It's, we're here, we just park in the garage, and it's not as cold in the garage. You can have a heated garage, or you can have a non-heated garage. But it's, if it gets that crazy, we just put them in the garage, you know. I have a two-car garage, and I just slide the vehicles in there. But we never really had a problem. You know, the thing with the garage is if it's in the garage and it's not in the right position, you got to snowblow the entire driveway and this and that. I try to keep my car, my truck, at the end of the apron of the driveway so I can just get right out to the street. I happen to live on a street here where they plow it, which is very fortunate. A lot of streets here aren't plowed. A lot of streets here aren't even paved, to be honest with you. And in my town, they are, but in the surrounding towns, they're not even paved. So it's kind of like, you know, you're taking your life in your hands when you live in the next town up here, because they kind of forget about them when the snowstorms come. And these people, they creep out in the spring a little bit, and they look around, make sure everything's all right. But, yeah, it's not as bad as you would think here. It's just a lot longer. We had snow 2 weeks ago, so that's the only bad thing. Over to you, Rocky.
82 BOR. Guys, I'm going to jump in the truck before Charlie gets here. I'm going to go get another cup of coffee. Catch you from there, 82 BOR. Over to you, Charlie.
Yeah, okay, very good, Rock. Yeah, I'm just getting on the Palisades now. Ken, since you have such a long winter there, and you've got unpaved roads, you have a lot of problem with mud in the spring. I know parts of Maine are like that. They have a mud season. I'm wondering if you have the same thing over there in Nebraska. Boy, it sounds like a hellhole. It really does. Might be a nice place to retire where, you know, if there's a lot of snow outside, you just put another log on the fire and go back to bed. But I don't know if I'd want to work out there. Over to you, Ken.
I hear you, man. No, I chose this town here because A, it's close to the railroad where I work, and B, our roads are paved, let's put it that way. But they have, like, when you leave town, they'll have, like, CR-50, CR-51, CR, that's county roads. You gotta go on to them to find these people that live on the farms, and they'll drive like a half mile in on a dirt road. It gets a little crazy. It is. It's muddy. It's crazy. It's, you can easily lose yourself off into a ditch, you know, and the ditches go down 4 or 5 feet. You know how you have phone poles in Jersey all along the street? Because I know I was a lineman. We put them in. And I said, the only reason these people are having accidents is because we're putting a freaking pole in the ground right there. If you didn't have a pole there, they wouldn't have had an accident. They said, hey, that's the way it goes, you know. Over here, they put the telephone pole 100 feet away from the road. And what they do is they put a ditch next to the road. And that's probably could be worse, because you hit that, you flip upside down, you know. But, yeah, that's how in the county roads, they get crazy with mud. And that's how it is over here, yeah. Yeah, and, it's, I don't know why people own cars that live out in the farms, because as soon as you, on a nice day, you drive on that road, your car is completely covered with, sand and dirt, you know? It's all sandy here because it's, the high plains, and, it used to be, you know, like everywhere else, under the water, but it seems like the topsoil has eroded over time, and we only have sand everywhere. I know 9W pretty good, and I know, Palisades. I haven't been on the Palisades in 15 years. I wonder if it's just as crazy as it used to be. I used to like driving on the Palisades when there was nobody on it. But every once in a while, working nowadays. Back to you.
N1LU Mobile. It's looking very nice. They just paved it last year. It was Pothole City over here. It was probably one of the worst roads I drove on. And I guess people complained, I complained, not to any officials, just over the air on a constant basis. And last summer they went through the process of repaving it. And it's a pleasure to drive on now. I enjoy it a lot. I used to go over the George and then up the Major Deegan. And that was a nightmare. This is a little bit longer ride, but it's a much nicer ride. Palisades is very picturesque, you know, covered in trees, and the height over here with the views that you have in the winter when there's no leaves on the trees. I enjoy it. It's a nice little calm down from work, and then up over the Tappan Zee and into Connecticut. So it's a little longer drive, but believe it or not, it's cheaper. The George is like $9 with Easy Pass. The Tappan Zee is $3. So it's a no-brainer. So that's what I do. And this time of the morning, the Palisades is practically empty, except for cops and deer. So it's a pleasant ride this time of the morning. Back to you, Ken. And then see if Rocky's in there.
Okay, very good. It's, I used to like the Palisades. It's nice. It was like a little break from the madness. It was almost like a decompression highway. You could decompress as you're riding on it, as long as nobody was acting crazy, you know. But when it rained, it always got wild. For some reason, it rained. It always seemed like it was, you could aquaplane or, you know, hydroplane a lot on there. It's funny over here. We have a highway called Highway 2, runs crossways across Nebraska, and then it connects with Alliance. It goes from Lincoln, Nebraska, to Alliance, Nebraska. It's about a five-hour ride. And it's one lane in each direction. And then you get here, and you can go north and south. South is Route 80. It's about an hour and a half, 2 hours south. You go north, that's Route 90. Now, when you get on this highway to go north to Route 90, you're going towards Mount Rushmore. Now, imagine this. You're driving up a two-lane highway, one lane in each direction. You're going up this highway, right? And then all of a sudden, you hit the South Dakota border. It opens up to four lanes, beautiful paved highway, not a soul on it. It's like South Dakota has all the money in the world to build these beautiful highways when Nebraska didn't do it. They just, you know, didn't want to go over the top of their budget. They wanted to stay within their means. So they just left the highway the way it was. And the one in South Dakota is beautiful. Four lanes, two in each direction. You know, we still wave at each other on the highway out here when you pass each other in the opposite directions, believe it or not. But up in South Dakota, right when you go over the border, it says, "Welcome to South Dakota." Bam, it's a four-lane, beautiful paved highway all the way up through the state. And you know there's no state tax in South Dakota. Can you believe it? Back to you.
Yeah, that sounds like the place to retire. No state tax. That would be real nice. Although I'm sure the winters there aren't any better than where you live. Probably worse. Rocky, you still in there? KD2BOR and 1LU Mobile.
Yeah, I just got back in the truck. KD2BOR, let me get moving here.
Okay, very good. Taking my time here on the Palisades. I just passed a cop sitting on the shoulder, so I don't want to get a ticket, and I certainly don't want to smash into a deer. But as soon as I get on 46, I'll bring it back up again and be there shortly. I should be there before 1:30. So that's good. I brought those... I found them. I did find them. I have those stainless steel keepers that I'm going to try to modify that arrow antenna with. And I also brought the Delrin shoulder washers that I used when I was building my beams to insulate the elements. Some people go with insulating the elements from the boom. Other people go with just passing the elements right through the metal boom. Six of one, half a dozen of the other. I've been told insulated elements through a boom are a lot quieter than when the elements are touching the metal boom. So I don't know. I may even try to go that far and insulate these elements, but I don't know if that'll change the characteristics of the antenna. So right now I just want to keep those elements in place in case that set screw that they screw in there ever becomes compromised, and these stainless steel keepers will do it. Over to you, Ken. This is N1LU Mobile, Palisades.
Okay, then I'll hand it over to Rocky when I'm done. What kind of an antenna, that's an interesting point you brought up, topic. What kind of antenna, what frequency, and so forth and so on? And personally, I would think that insulated elements would be the way to go, because now the boom is not part of the equation of the antenna. That would throw the entire plot of the field off and the whole resonance of the antenna. I mean, you have to have the driven element insulated. That's a given, right? Because you have to maintain that resonance of the driven element length and so forth. And then the reflector, I would believe, would have to be also, insulated. But the rest of them, when they put them through the boom, I think that's a bad design, because just about every Yankee I've seen had it, for VHF at least, would be through an insulated, Delrin insulated grommet, as I call it. But maybe you could correct me in the point that why they would not insulate it, it would not change the resonance of the antenna. Of course, it's not the driven elements, so, you know, it doesn't have anything to do with the load, but it would make the pattern askew quite a bit, I think, because now you have the boom entering the equation of the directing elements. Over to you, Rocky.
All right, let me see if I have it. Rocky may be getting out of the truck, making his way back into the shop. Okay, there's a couple different designs out there. Some people just mount the elements right on top of the boom. I think Cushcraft was famous for that. They'd have some sort of a device that would hold the element on top of the boom, metal to metal. And most of the time, the driven element is insulated from the boom, but not the reflector. Reflector's always part of the boom. I guess if you're using shoulder watches for all of them, then the reflector would be in there as well. The antenna that I'm talking about is the Arrow 220 5-element beam. If you look it up on Arrow's website, or just and get the model number and search the model number, you'll see a video of some guy putting it together. And the only weak spot I saw was where they screw the screw through the top of the square boom into the element to hold the element in place. And, you know, with twisting and the wind loads and stuff, that's going to be the weak spot of the antenna. So I was trying to come up with a way to keep those elements in place if that screw ever gives out. And the shoulder washers are the best way to do it. You just push them on both sides of the element, and it holds the element in position. And that should work out fine. But anyway, check it out and let me know what you think the next time I talk to you. The Arrow 5-element 220 beam.
Nice. I will definitely do that. I was always in the impression that Arrow was a temporary antenna for, like, portable use. That was the whole idea of the Arrow thing with them, because they used arrow shafts from hunting arrows, and they screwed them in expeditiously, were able to take them out. And then there was another company out there that came out called Elk, I believe, ELK, like the animal. And they had antennas that you could hold, like, they had sort of a bicycle grip at the end of it for pointing at, like, satellites and things like that for temporary use. But I was always under the impression those antennas, and apparently they have matured into a company that makes more permanent, substantial antennas. It's pretty interesting. Hey, all I can say is this. One of my favorite antenna companies is, I don't like Cushcraft personally. They have a lot of marketing stuff going on, and they make commercial antennas and so forth, but their amateur line of antennas I don't really care for, because they're really, I don't know how to put it, I've had a few of them, and I'm not impressed with the quality or the way that they're built. I mean, they're not really clever in how they get things, and it just seems like they're cheap for what you pay for. But, you know, I was talking to a guy today called Parfit. Dale Parfit is, he owns a company called Par Antennas. Real stand-up guy. Real smart guy. When you call up his company, he answers the phone. And I had a nice discussion with him, and esoteric mode about filtering for radios. But he's all into this Earth, Moon, Earth stuff now, operating with dishes and stuff. And he said he was talking to Germany with like 5 watts off the moon the other day on its sideband. And using like, but the dishes are tremendous. They're like 3 meters wide, you know. So, Rocky, that's what you need to do. Set up an Earth, Moon, Earth setup on top of your shop over there. Back to you, Rocky.
Okay, Kenny. I'm in outer space anyway most of the time. I'll just stick with my two antennas. Guys, you pick it up. I gotta see a man about a horse. Katie 2 BOR.
Alright, let me see if I have it. Yeah, my Elmer was, when I first met him, was into EME. He had a setup on a short tripod in his backyard. He had a TV camera mounted to the center of the tripod. And he was able to point the antennas using the TV camera from inside the shack, and he pointed at the moon when it was full. And he had a lot of fun with that. But that takes a lot of dedication, a lot of work, and it's not reliable, I don't think, on a regular basis to be able to talk to people that, you know, like on a commute or something. It's good for, fun and games. And there's a lot of guys that are into it, but, that's not the mode for me. I don't have that much time to invest in it. I need to be able to get on the radio, make a few contacts, get off, and, that's my fix for the day. Luckily, I have this hour commute from home to work, so I get a lot of RF, addiction out of my system. When I retire, it'll be a different story. But, when I get home after work, I very rarely get on the radio. Just don't have the time, especially in the summer. Lots of stuff going on outside. Lawns to be mowed, pools to be cleaned, dogs to be walked, yards to be raked, etc. But in the winter, it's a little bit less hectic, and I get more time on the radio at the house. But hopefully when I retire, that'll change as well. Over to you, Ken.
Took the words right out of my mouth. I don't know where these guys get all this time to do this. The guy works out of his house, I guess. That's why he answers the phone when I call it. But it's funny because, where do you get room to put up like a 15-foot monster dish and not annoy your neighbors? Okay, let's say you have it. But all of the maintenance behind this thing and all of the games you got to play with it, exactly. It's kind of funny. I actually talk more on the radio while I'm at work than when I'm at home, just like you're saying, I'm sitting at work right now talking on it, so that's when I get my time to use it. But the funny thing is, even when I was single, I didn't have time for that because I would be out carousing around, And I just want to turn around and use it sometimes. It's kind of interesting when you talk to other people, though, how involved they are with it. Very scientific, going in that direction. But I enjoy talking to people like that once in a while because they're very knowledgeable. But they go off in a tangent that... it's like, wow, I can't believe you're involved with ham radio. You should be, you should own company like he does. Obviously he does. But it's funny. The whole thing is funny. The people you meet, But on that note, I'm going to have to sign off because it's getting near the end of my shift. I'm gonna close the station down, close down the radio shop, and step out of here. But it's been a pure pleasure talking to you, and hopefully you have an uneventful commute. Make it home very safely, and hopefully I'll talk to you again another night. But over to you, N1LU. This is Central VHC. I'll listen to your final.
N2VHC, N1LU, mobile. Yeah, Ken, good talking to you as well. Always a pleasure. One quick question. That PAR antennas, I'm pretty familiar with him, I think. Isn't that the guy that makes the the loop antennas, the horizontal? They're sort of triangular. And also does moxons. I don't know if he does beams at all. Is that the same guy?
Absolutely. Dale Parfit, PAR antennas. Yep, he makes the moxons. He has the OA50, OA144s, OA432s. Yep. And I had an OA50 from many, 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 many years ago. And I lived over in Europe, and I used to talk to him about it, and he sent me, I bought a couple 08 144s and some other stuff, and he mailed it to me, 25% discount, free shipping, because he gave me like a military discount. He was a great guy. And it was funny because I talked to the Germans with that antenna, and they used the big wheel antenna over there, which is similar to that one, but not as, you know, robust. And they were amazed to hear about PAR antennas, you know? And he said, actually, he had Germans calling him up, requesting that antenna, because they talked to an American guy, he said, over there. And the funny thing was, he said, the English people were talking to you on 6 meters. They wanted one for 4 meters, because they have a 4 meter band. And they said, if that antenna works for that young man so good, why don't you make a 4 meter? He goes, you know, he made 4 meter antennas and sold about a dozen of them to the English people over there. And he said, I want to thank you for advertising my antennas, because nobody ever knew what they were until you were over there, apparently. Yeah, that's the same guy. Back to you.
Connected KC2HWG.
And 1LU mobile. Yeah, I think shortly after 9/11, I was looking into buying a Moxon, and I believe he was out of commission for a while for amateur buyers, and I think he had a military contract. Right after 9/11, he was developing antennas for the military, so he was backlogged for the amateur community. But I think now he's back up and rolling. I think he's out in your part of the country. I'm not sure. But yeah, definitely quality stuff. Never owned any of his stuff, but from what I read on the internet and, you know, the videos and stuff I saw, he really, really did a nice job. All right, Ken, I'll let you go. I know you got to. I know you got to run. Good hearing you this morning. Have yourself a great weekend. N2VAZ and 1LU Mobile 73.
Morning, Charlie. Good morning, Rocky. Good morning, fellas.
Morning, Mike. Stand by 1 second. I want to see if Ken wants to sign. Stand by.
Yeah, good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Hey, yeah, he's out. He's in the mountains in the, I don't know what you call it, up there in North Carolina. He moved from Florida up to North Carolina, out to the mountains, up there by West Virginia or somewhere. And he likes it very much. He says he likes the, he's 4,000 feet above sea level. He enjoys it very much. And that's all I have to say. I'm going to drop the link on my transmission to clear up the repeater on my side and say 73s for you guys. Bye-bye. From Alliance, Nebraska. N2VHC out.
KC2HWG disconnected. N2VHZ repeater disconnected.
Okay, sorry about that, Mike. A little backlogged over here today. Had a couple of guys on Echolink. That's Ken out in Alliance, Nebraska. Got a nice setup.